Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Katie Rose is a British singer and songwriter who is powered by the understanding that our voices can change our world individually and collectively. Endlessly fascinated by the diversity of human expression, sung, spoken, written, and signed, she creates music, events, and sessions where people can experience the joy, magic, and power of voice. To that end, Katie has released 4 albums, namely Flame, Empty Cup, Shivers Rain, and Singing Tree. She has written for local and international media, directed multiple choir projects, and coached individuals from beginners to acclaimed industry professionals. Katie is a powerhouse multitasking maestro, wholly committed to making the magical benefits of singing accessible and inclusive. She has directed and arranged music for over 20 choirs, 5 London hospitals, and the mass choral event Sing for Water London. Described by The Guardian as a fine singer and an eye and ear opener by F Roots magazine, in 2025, Katie releases 2 mesmerizing remixes of Can You Feel It, masterfully produced by renowned EDM music producer and DJ Michael Dolly. Up next on Celeb Svant, we've got Katie Rose.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Oh, hi. It's lovely to be here, Barrett. Thank you so much for inviting me. I am here in London, UK, and it's pretty sunny here, actually. So we're all doing pretty good.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? Okay, this is going to be my world of creativity. What was that feeling? What was that story? And how did that journey progress?
Thank you. Yeah, so I grew up in a musical family, so I kind of was surrounded by music from the get-go. But I did have a eureka moment, I think, when I was about 15, as far as I can remember, where I just was watching a singer live, and I thought, that is what I want to do. That's what I want to be. And it was almost like I could see the relationship between her and the audience and just how transformative that was, and that incredible exchange of energy between listener and performer, and how it's just an incredible, magical, profound thing. And so then I just kind of realized that for me, singing was deeply profound and deeply amazing, and that's what I wanted to do, and not just for myself but also to help other people sing. So that's what my world has been about since then.
And what were the next steps? So you had the eureka moment. How did that transform to allow it to now become professional?
I was already singing at that point and performing, and I went off after that and did a degree in theatre and literature. So then that involved a lot of voice and performance, and bit by bit I got my way into exploring. I was very curious about how was sound used in different traditions, and particularly spiritual traditions. Like, I got very curious about things like chanting and yoga and all these things that have become quite mainstream now in the West. But when I was exploring them here in the UK, they were a little bit more on the fringe, let's say. So I spent a lot of time just running around sort of fringe festivals, exploring those kind of things and leading singing and sound groups and exploring, and then playing music myself and performing and recording music that was all about that. It was all about how can singing and sound take us into a state of connection with ourselves, with our inner world, and support our well-being, I guess. Yeah. And so from there, I then ended up finding my way into choirs, because through leading singing groups, I just found that I just loved the sound of people's voices and I wanted more harmony. So I then found my way into sort of the community choir circuit, started leading choirs, and that became very quickly professional as well. So it's kind of immediate, really. And I then found myself in hospitals and hospices and mental health groups and all sorts of different groups, just seeing what singing could do for people. And it was just phenomenally amazing. And all this time, at the same time, recording my own work, you know, exploring singing and words and what words and sound and voice do for me personally, as well as enjoying what I could offer other people through it.
So yeah, you referenced the energy of sound that now you were ahead of the curve. A lot of people were ahead of the curve. Now it's becoming more mainstream about how energy and sound can heal the body and heal emotions and mental health and all those type of things. So you mentioned that you figured out how voice and sound could, how that made you feel, you know, through that journey. How does it make you feel?
Oh, just wonderful. I find singing is the most joyful thing that I can do, the most joyful things I can do in terms of, and that doesn't mean I have to feel joyful necessarily. And that's the wonderful thing about singing. There is a song for every emotion, for every human experience. And if we can't find a song that really matches our experience, then we can write one. So, you know, so there's endless possibilities for singing. So you can be feeling any kind of way and you will find or create a song that matches that and that allows you to express those feelings. So I think for me, singing is a multi-level experience. It allows us that emotional expression. It also focuses our mind. We have to be really focused. You can't be thinking about, oh, what's on my shopping list or what's happening tomorrow. You don't have time. You have to really focus on the lyrics you're singing, the melody you're singing. So that's very good for our mental health because it brings us into the present moment, like other kind of creative activities. So mentally, it's very good for the mind. It's very focusing, very cleansing of the mind. It kind of takes your mind off things. It's also very physiologically energizing because you have to breathe more deeply in order to sing. And when we breathe more deeply, that regulates our heart rate, it regulates our brain waves. So we start entering into a state of well-being, basically. And there's tons of research that backs all of this up. And there's loads and loads of scientific research. And of course, it's been known for centuries, centuries and centuries and centuries. It's just that our modern world likes to explain things through science. So I'm really thrilled that there's that research because it gives me another angle on what people had said from the beginning of time, from the beginning of kind of spiritual traditions and ancient traditions. You know, singing was part of hospitals in ancient Greece. You know, that's just one example. It has always been part of our expression as human beings.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's a journey of the choice that I'm packing. The energy exchange to you guys for the hard work that you do in the creation process. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, vinyls, cassettes on a massive comeback. A couple of years ago, 5.9 million vinyls sold in the UK, the biggest since 1990. Also last year, there's a product of goods in the UK where they gauge exchanges on. And based on the exchanges, a product can be in this basket if it has high levels of those numbers. And because CDs are upsurging again, CDs are back in that basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older people. But then we've got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. And you're talking about focusing on the lyrics and being present with the mind with listening to music. Now, I've got more of the feeling that when a person's unpacking and doing the physical experience of listening, it's more focus, it's more cleansing, and it's more clearing. Compared to on the streaming, it's just in the background. People aren't really listening. It's like a subsidiary of an action that they just might be tapping into with some parts of the brain. Looking at all these different aspects that I've just mentioned, what are your thoughts of the landscape at the moment?
I think it's fascinating. That's really fascinating. That's a really interesting question. I feel that music is going to act on us anyhow it reaches us. So even if it is just on the background, it is still going to have some kind of effect on us. And we've seen, again, there are studies that show that even just listening to music or having music in the background will do things for us. Like if you listen to banging house music really fast, it's going to raise your heart rate. Even if it's just in the background, it will slightly raise your heart rate. And the opposite is true for, you know, more chilled out music. So what we choose to listen to is actually really important, even if we're not paying that much attention. And then, of course, you're absolutely right that if we want to get some of those other deeper benefits, the more we engage and the more we actively participate with the singing. So if you start tapping your toe, that's going to send a whole load of stuff happening through your body. If you start singing along, then that's going to amplify your experience in terms of how much participation is going on. So those levels, there are all those levels of engagement. And the wonderful thing is that music's doing something for us at whatever level we choose to engage with it. I didn't know that actually about the upsurge in CDs and physical products in teenagers. So that's fascinating. And I find that really heartening in a way, because I feel that streaming, well, ultimately, I feel streaming is ripping off artists. And we know that. And that's making it really, really hard for artists to actually sustain themselves in the world. So here in the UK, a coffee at the moment is shot up to about, you can maybe pay £4.50 or £5 or even sometimes for a posh coffee here. And that takes someone, let's say, a few minutes to make, compared to a piece of music that might take you months and months to craft and is the result of years and years and years of training. The fact that you only pay maybe 99p for a download, if at all. And if you get any streaming money, it's going to be 0.0001p. So, you know, that for me says something about how we're, you know, how artists are being devalued and exploited in the world. And I have problems with that for sure. I don't have problems with the idea that music should be absolutely available to anyone that wants to listen to it. I love that inclusiveness. And I love that the internet has brought us so much more inclusion. However, I still feel artists need to get paid. And there's some really big, you know, things that we need to navigate around that. So I find it very heartening to hear that, you know, people are investing in the product, physical product, because that actually honors the energy exchange more. If we think about everything as energy. Yeah.
It's interesting you've said that. Your words were, we know that the artists are being ripped off or something to that extent. But in fact, a lot of people don't know this. So I was speaking to a group of 10 people at one point, and I was speaking to a group of 8 people at another time. And I said to them, just randomly, you know, these are people who enjoy music. Maybe they'll go to a concert every now and then. They more the stream than do physical generally. And I said to them, you know, if an artist has had 100 million streams, how much money do you think that artist has got or gets in their back pocket? And the first group of people said $50 million. The second group of people said $1 million. And I said, actually, it's $1,000. And they were shocked and horrified. So there definitely needs to be an education piece around this. I know Ray, Snoop Dogg, a bunch of others are now voicing these, you know, these stats and these words. So it's a combination of not hitting the consumer over the head, but letting them understand that not everyone is Ed Sheeran, Katy Perry, and Adele who are making the millions. There are whole 85% in that middle bandwidth who are not making fantastic money and need to find ways to create and sustain.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think there does need to be more awareness, and it's great that artists are speaking out, and, you know, even artists who, as you say, are going viral, having masses of play, and then saying, yeah, but I still can't, I'm still having to live in my parents' house, basically, because I can't afford to pay the rent, you know, and this is crazy. So yeah, there's something that really needs addressing there. I mean, there has been some debate in the UK government about it. So I think the awareness is probably a bit high, is quite high here, but it would be interesting to find out exactly how many people really know that when they're streaming, that's the implication for the artist.
How do you create a song? What is your process? Is there a process, or how does that flow through?
Okay, so for me, it happens basically on my keyboard and with a piece of paper. So the piece of paper is for the lyrics. The keyboard is for, yeah, obviously fleshing out chords and finding the melodic side. And it sometimes can come both ways. Sometimes it's words first. Sometimes it's music first. Sometimes just noodling around on the keyboard, you start singing something or a melody comes along, then you put words to it. But most, I think, of the time, there's an impetus in me to express something, and something comes along. And also, I often find ideas come along when I am on the move. So when I'm in the park or movement, funnily enough, buses or going places, and movement seems to also trigger off ideas for me. So we are very lucky that we have this technology on our phone now, isn't it, that you can just record an idea it's great. So sometimes that's a very handy thing to have, because you could just sing an idea into your phone quickly. So that does sometimes happen. So, and I feel that inspiration, of course, is everywhere in life. You know, our lives are full of experiences that we might want to write songs about. So, of course, often the songs do come that are kind of related to what I'm feeling. So some songs are very expressive, and some songs never make it out into the public realm for that reason. And I'm sure other artists would say the same. There's a difference between what I call personal processing kind of songs, which is so deeply personal that they're not really something I'd want to put out. I might then refine that so it's a little bit less raw, and that it might also then speak more universally on a topic or a feeling, or so that it feels like, yeah, that's something I feel maybe other people can relate to. But yeah, there's inspiration is everywhere. Could just be, you know, you're walking through the park and it's a beautiful day and it's spring, you know, and that's, yeah, and that can make you just sit down and write something. So yeah, that's my process roughly. And it's always changing.
Oh, yeah, and like a trip, because energy and energy is always changing and flowing. It's interesting you said that you sometimes have songs that you don't put out there simply because they're too raw. Another concept that I've discussed with multiple people is that so many people don't listen or hear or digest or process lyrics of songs. I'll be like, do you know what this song's actually about? I'm like, no idea. I just love this song. And then you tell them like, oh, wow. Because it's just, again, that periphery. It's not, yeah, they love it, but it's just like, oh, let's just jam. It's not like, let's find out more, you know, let's dive deeper into this world. And it fascinates me that so many people are like, oh, I love that song. I have no idea who's singing it. I say to guys, oh, I'm going to be interviewing this artist. And like, oh, I have no idea who that is. And then I play like five of the songs. Like, oh, I love that person. I'm like, but how can you not know who that person is if you love that song? It just, for me, yeah, boggles my mind. But it's just, everyone's different, obviously.
Yeah, everyone is very different how we relate to music. And some people relate to it on a very kinesthetic level, which is awesome as well. Sometimes, you know, we're all different. We have different dominant senses. So some people are really into words. Like I am really into the words of songs, and I'm quite particular about what words I want to sing, what choir, especially in choirs, what words I want to introduce to people. I'm very particular about that. I'm very careful about that. And then, you know, other people, it will be much more about the general sound or the how it makes them feel in their body, which would be more kinesthetic, or the rhythm. Maybe some people are just totally powered by rhythm. If something's got a groove, you know, I've got friends who are drummers, you know, they're powered by groove.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're going to catch on to. So I think there's no right or wrong way, but I think it's really useful to know what your kind of dominant senses are, and also to widen them. You know, I always try to widen my vista. So if I know my dominant sense is often, yeah, listening and auditory, and I'm very into words, but it's also good for me to widen and then think, yeah, but think about the other parts of the music. And this is what why music is so amazing, because it touches on all of our senses,
yeah,
all the time. Yeah.
You're obviously aware of NLP and the processing skills.
Yes.
Visual, auditory, kinesthetic. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the five senses, just we have five or six senses, depends how you see it. But yeah, just being aware that it's a sensory experience, yeah, and having worked at times with adults and children with so-called learning difficulties, I don't particularly relate to that word, but, yeah, you know, or multi-sensory issues. And I found that I had to communicate, I had to learn how to really use those senses and work out, what sense can I reach this person through? If a person is nonverbal, but they relate really well to touch, then that's my way to communicate with them, you know, gently and appropriately, obviously. Or if they really love music, then that's a way to communicate. So, yes, it's that multi-sensory awareness that we are multi-sensory beings.
Yeah, I'm not mentioning the genres because, you know, the podcast is for everyone with all genres, but there are specific genres that of types of music that I literally can't listen to. There's a type of genre of music, the minute I hear it, I get so anxious, I start feeling anxiety, I have to switch it off. There's another type of music or performance that when it's performed, it actually feels like knives are cutting through my body. I can't handle it. And there's another type of music that it actually hurts my ears and hurts my brain. So understanding these, I work within the parameters of what my body can handle and can enjoy, basically.
Absolutely. I think it's very, very personal to each of us. And we really have to know, what's that phrase? One person's medicine is another person's poison.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you have to know yourself, and you have to know what works for you and what our triggers are and those kind of things. Because then, you know, then you're empowered and you don't have to expose yourself to those things if they don't work for you.
What's coming up next over the next few months?
So I am at the moment, I've just had this lovely single come out called Can You Feel It, which was remixed by my good friend Michael Doyley, who's an amazing DJ and music producer. So a big shout out to him. And he took a track of mine from an album I released over lockdown, because everyone was making albums at that time because we were all at home. And and so he took a track from that album called Flame and made this incredible remix. So we've just put that out. So we're just really sharing that at the moment with the world and seeing how it learned. Because it's a new collaboration, we were really curious to see how people feel about it. Can you feel it literally? You know, how does this song make people feel? Made a lovely fun video with my friend who's a kind of film director and editor, Leon Stuperich. So, you know, we've been really curious at the moment to see how that lands. We do have another track coming up, I hope, afterwards. And I'm hoping there will also be an album on the back of that. And aside from that, then there's also my choir work and working with clients. That's ongoing, and my ongoing passion for helping people reclaim the joy and the magic and the power of their voices. And that's wonderful.
Explain to us, what do you enjoy about leading a choir?
Oh, I think we're talking about the sensory experience of music. On a sensory experience level, the experience of being surrounded by vocal harmony is for me just amazing. Hearing human voice, I mean, there are so many incredible forms and ways that we can use our voices and so many incredible genres of music. So I have always loved hearing that. I love hearing human voice singing in different ranges and different pitches simultaneously. And also for me, it's very affirming to see people and myself be part of the experience of people who may come from every different kind of background, every kind of different politics or culture, and yet we can all experience this peace and coordinate together when we sing together. And for me, that affirms something. It affirms literally that it's possible for humans to live and sing harmoniously with each other. And that we, in that process, you don't have to lose your individuality. Your individual, your voice is important. And each individual voice is very important in the choir to keep the sound going. For me, that's a very powerful thing. And it gives me hope, and it gives me this feeling of connection with people. Because, again, science has told us and shown us that oxytocin is released when people sing together, which is a bonding hormone. That hormone is released during childbirth as well. And during intimacy. So it's about, it's a bonding hormone. So it's there to help us feel close to each other. So the feeling I get of when I'm conducting is that I feel connected to people in a very beautiful way. And I don't even necessarily know everything about them. I may not know, certainly I don't know all their biography and they don't know mine, but we feel connected on this really lovely creative level. And that for me gives me a feeling of kind of creative companionship, let's say, togetherness with people that's very affirming, it's peaceful, it's nourishing, and we have a whole lot of fun. There's a lot of laughter in choirs. There's a lot of trying things out. You know, the learning process is for all of us. Whenever we learn something, it's just like riding a bike. You're going to fall off regularly, and you have to fall off in order to get the bike, you know, get on top of the bike and know how to run it. So it's the same with any song that you learn. You're going to have to make mistakes. You're going to have to practice. And that can be really fun when we embrace it. So there's lots of laughter. There's lots of, you know, exploring and getting to grips with the things that you mentioned. You know, what do these words mean to us? What does this feel like to us? What's the rhythm of this? What's driving this song? What's behind it? And how does that make us feel? How do we communicate that to the audience? There's so many different layers of things we're exploring together, but it's all done in fun. And being together and having a positive experience. And ideally, I want people to come out feeling a lot better than when they left. They first came in. So when they leave, standing tall and smiling, I think, yeah, that's the magic of music. It's just, yeah, it's amazing.
How does one become a choir conductor? Is it like, what is that process? How did you become one? Was it something that came naturally to you?
It did come naturally. And it did happen sort of by my way of just finding my way into it. And I think any creative path is often like that. It's a very organic thing. And partly because of how our culture is, it's not, you know, if I went in, I remember early careers conversations, you know, it was just assumed I would be a teacher because I liked the arts. You know, there wasn't anyone saying, oh, great, you sing, you're going to be a singer. You know, it wasn't like that in that time. So we're supposed to get a proper job and all the rest. That means that artists are forced, and in a way that has its ups and downs, but it forces artists into really understanding that they can't follow an A to B linear pathway. We have to find our own way. I mean, and it's often a very organic, meandering, ups and downs kind of way. But for me, my heritage is full of people that sing in choirs. My grandfather was the hearing child of deaf parents, and he led signing choirs for people who were deaf. Yeah, so that's fascinating. And my aunt and my uncle and my dad were all involved in singing. My cousin also leads choirs, and she's based in Germany. And then another aunt in Australia leads choirs. So and I didn't even know all of those things until later. I just found my sort of way into choirs and then realized that it felt quite natural for me. And then I realized, oh yeah, of course it does, because it's just part of my ancestry.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 5 hours, 10 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs of those artists, what would those songs be?
Okay, first up is going to be Kate Bush. And because she's just incredible. And as a young person, yeah, she was just phenomenally inspiring for me. And I think the song would be Running Up That Hill. There's many others of hers, but recently that's the one I've been tuning into. I live on a hill and I run up it. So it's a handy song to have. And then something from Ella Fitzgerald, again, very difficult to choose, but the one that's just coming to my mind is Misty. Again, when I was just learning to sing as a teenager and finding my voice, I spent a lot of time listening to a double album of Ella songs, and I loved Misty, particularly her version of it. Eric Whitaker is the next person. Eric Whitaker is a amazing choral composer, classical music, just an awesome guy. And his song, his arrangement, I should say, of something called Lux Aurumque. I actually don't know how to say that, because it's in Latin.
Okay.
It means, yeah, light and gold, I think.
Okay.
Or, don't quote me on that. Yeah, light is looks. So I think it's light and gold. But that's a beautiful piece. And if I want to chill out, I just put that on and that just sorts me out. That's 3. I think something I listen to at the moment, Gregory Porter, If Love Is Overrated. That song at the moment has caught my heart, my imagination. And a song that we're all loving in choirs, I'll just throw in, is Lady Gaga and Bruno Mars, Die With A Smile. Everyone's just loving singing that at the moment. So we're just, and that's very current. So that's really fun to sing. And it's just got, and it's just sort of caught all of our imagination recently. So yeah.
Lovely. I love that mix. Thank you. So Katie, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Find and love your voice. Your voice is amazing. We're not often told that. We're not often complimented on our voices. But I really wish we were, because our voices and your voice, whoever's listening, I'm saying this to you, you know, your voice is amazing. Your voice can change the world, literally. If you stand up for a cause, if you just go and tell someone you love them, you decide to have a difficult conversation with someone and it, you know, you clear the air, your voice will change the world, your world, and the world around you. So never forget that. Never forget that. Hold on to it. Doesn't matter what you've been told in the past. You can sing, you can speak, you can sign, you can express yourself in the way that's right for you. And never lose touch with that. This amazing instrument that you have within you is magical and powerful. And it's so joyful when you allow yourself to use it in the way that is unique to you and that works for you. So that would be my encouragement. Love your voice. Find your voice. Enjoy your voice.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.